So welcome everyone, happy new year, and welcome to the Advanced Data Analysis course for SUPA. My name is Martin Hendry, and we're going to be spending a good chunk of the next 2 days in this room. It's quite an intensive course, I think that's fair to say. The feedback over the years it's been running has still been broadly very positive, but nonetheless it is a sort of short, sharp shock treatment by way of introducing you to some advanced data analysis methods. I thought it would be good to just begin by giving you a little bit of the backstory of sort of why we're here. The origins of this course go back to when SUPA was originally set up, long before any of you were graduate students, perhaps before some of you had begun university altogether. And for my sins in the early days, I was on the grad school management committee, and that meant we were tasked with the job of coming up with some lecture courses that would be suitable for all SUPA students across all the different themes. And it proved pretty difficult. You know, like the particle physicists thought, yes, everyone should know some particle physics, and the solid state people thought everyone should know some solid state physics. But it was kind of hard to reach agreement. And then I came up with the idea that the one thing that maybe everyone ought to know about was some issues around data analysis. Even if you're not the person doing data analysis, you've got to understand what other people have done in order to interpret their results or to make sense of your own. So everybody said, oh yeah, that seems like a good idea, so you organised the course. So what happened was in 2006, for the first time, we ran the SUPA data analysis course. We ran it in this format for the very good reason that the video conference rooms, which many of you now know and love from semester one, didn't actually exist at that time. They were still being bought and paid for and constructed. So we basically had no choice but to get everyone together and deliver the course face to face. Now consequently, it didn't really make a lot of sense to do the course, you know, 1 hour per week for an entire semester. We weren't going to drag people all the way down from St Andrews, Dundee, Aberdeen once a week. So we thought as a little experiment, we would try it as a 2-day residential course. And I guess there was another immediate benefit of that, which was that it would be a chance for the SUPA students from different departments to get together. And so as a result, what we also did was we arranged for there to be a curry on the first night of the 2-day course. And I'm pleased to say that's a tradition which has maintained to this day. So more about that in a minute. So as I say, we had the option once the video rooms were fully functional, that we could have switched the format of the course to a more conventional, you know, 1 hour per week through an entire semester. But actually we decided not to. It's partly because I think it's quite healthy that we've got a range of different types of course delivered across the SUPA grad school. It's also because it's a convenient way for us to open this out to students across, well, in the old days we used to call them in Glasgow University faculties, and across the Faculty of Physical Sciences we could attract students from chemistry and geography and earth sciences who maybe wouldn't have been so bothered about coming every week. But if it was just 2 days at the start of the semester, then perhaps they would be attracted to a course that was relevant not just to physics and astronomy anyway, but to the whole of the physical sciences. So can I check to begin with, do we have anyone here from, well, we now call it the College of Science and Engineering, but anyone who's from Glasgow Uni but not from the School of Physics and Astronomy? Oh, we've got one. Well, welcome. I'm going to go round in a minute and see sort of where everybody's from and sort of, you know, what you do. It won't take long, but it's just good to get an idea of where everyone's coming from in terms of past experience. We'll come to you in a minute, but I'm glad you were able to make it. And although the restructuring of Glasgow Uni has meant that because we've now got this College of Science and Engineering, it's maybe less likely that non-SUPA students will come along. At the same time, we want to continue to offer that option. So for that reason and for several others, we've kept it going as the 2-day format. Now the downside to all of that is that it means that we're going to cover a lot of ground. To be honest, a lot of it will, at this stage of your PhD, perhaps not be immediately obvious how you're going to use it. In some cases, it might be the case that you're already using some of these data analysis tools. It will vary a lot across the class. My experience from teaching this now, this is year number 6, is that even if people don't immediately identify the value of the course material right away during the 2 days themselves, that, you know, how I've tried to sell it to people is that this is equipping you with a kind of toolbox that you might use in 6 months or in a year or in 18 months, but sooner or later you're bound to encounter, either in your own work or in interpreting the work of others, the sorts of issues that we're going to address today. So what I'm really doing, what I'm setting out to do, is to equip you with sort of a base knowledge that will sort of open your eyes to what possibilities there are in this area, and just, you know, give you a taste of some of the topics that are currently at the cutting edge in data analysis across the physical sciences. And that means that when you do encounter them a bit later on, sort of, you know, in the field, where you're actually sitting reading somebody's paper and trying to make sense of what they mean when they talk about Markov chain Monte Carlo methods or significance levels or all this jargon that we're going to discuss, then you'll have something to fall back on. So for that reason, view the material that I'm going to be, you know, delivering as by no means stuff that you've got to sort of master right away. You know, it'd be great if you do, but you know, that is the consequence of delivering it in just 2 days. That, you know, I'm going to be throwing a lot of stuff at you, and basically some of it will sink in, I hope, right away. Some of it won't. Some of it will just have to settle there for a while until you're maybe using it yourself later on. So I think it's absolutely crucial that what I do is provide good resources for kind of backup afterwards. There's a total of 500 slides that we've got to get through. Now, you know, we don't absolutely have to do every last one of them, but in preparing the material for the 2 days, again, I wanted it to function as a sort of ongoing resource that you could refer to. So that's a heck of a lot of stuff that would have killed an awful lot of trees if I'd printed it all off. So basically what I've done is I've posted everything on MySuper already. It's also there on an accompanying website based at GU, which means that even if someone's not a super student, they can still access it all anyway. And I'm also audio recording everything. So, in fact, the audio recordings from last year are all still there already, but, you know, every year the course develops in a slightly different way. We cover different things, people ask different questions. So I will be uploading the 2011 podcasts, the 2011 audio files, through the course of today and also after tomorrow. So the function of all of that is so that anything you don't quite get during these 2 days, or you don't see the point of, if later on you're encountering something in your own research and you think, ah, wait a minute, the ADA course talked about that, you can go back and hopefully make more sense of it then. The other thing I've undertaken to do in each of the years since MySuper was set up is to maintain a sort of discussion forum for the course afterwards. Now, to be honest, most of the time there isn't a great deal to discuss, but it means that people should just be aware that if they've got, you know, particular issues to do with their own or others' data analysis and they want an extra person to bounce ideas off, then I'm perfectly happy to do that. And indeed, sometimes just sharing a problem, whether it be to do with a code you're writing or a type of statistics that you're applying, you can share it with other people across SUPA, and it might be that somebody else has encountered the same sort of thing. So that's the sort of context, that's where we're coming from. And to look more specifically at what we're trying to do, what I want to do is to try to look at some pretty sort of cutting-edge aspects of data analysis. That's why we call it advanced data analysis. And essentially what those encapsulate is ideas to do with Bayesian inference. So what you see up there is reference to, no, doesn't look as if my laser pointer's working, not to worry, reference to different approaches to data analysis, what people refer to as Bayesian and classical or frequentist methods. Now, those might be terms that you've not even encountered before, although I know that some people have, and some of the Glasgow people have taken elementary courses that I've already taught on similar material. But Bayesian methods are all the rage in the physical sciences right now. And what I want to do is make sure by the end of these 2 days that people have a good sense of what that's all about and maybe start thinking about how it could be useful in problems that you yourselves are working on. Just by way of a little straw poll at the beginning, how many people here have heard of the term Bayesian inference before? Well, that's good. You know, that, I mean, the first time I taught this course in 2005, there was only about 3 hands went up. So again, it's an indication that these methods are becoming a bit more common. However, lots of people haven't heard of it before, so I think that demonstrates that there's still a need for a course such as this. Other aspects of what we want to address are ways in which we can tackle data analysis these days in a very different manner from how, well, even when I was a graduate student, what, 25 years ago? No, not as long as that, I'm not that old, 20 years ago. It was still pretty challenging to do data analysis on a computer because computers just weren't good enough. Whereas nowadays, a lot of computational techniques can take a lot of the drudgery out of doing data analysis. So part of what I also want to convey to you is some of, you know, the clever methods that are out there. Obviously in 2 days, and all the more so because you're not doing practical work yourself, it's going to be hard to give you, you know, the full story. But just hopefully I'll give you enough that those of you who think you could make explicit use of some of the modern computational methods will know how to get started. And to that end, one aspect of the assessment for this course is an actual computational challenge. More on the assessment a wee bit later on. Okay, so I'd say, you know, the history of SUPA goes back a long way. I was involved in the grad school from the beginning, and now we've got our shiny video conference rooms. But, you know, we said from the very beginning that we wanted to deliver courses by a variety of modes, lectures, distance learnings, and short courses. So this is an example of a short course, and, you know, it maybe wasn't in our planning at the beginning that we would always deliver it over just 2 days in a very compressed form. But thus far, it seemed to be fairly successful in that manner. And of course, I would encourage you over these 2 days to give me some feedback as to whether you think it is the right way to learn about this stuff, or whether other approaches like, you know, weekly lectures would be better. So we're here in Glasgow. As I say, the main reason we're here in Glasgow really is just because I was the person charged with the task of running the course. I guess we're in the Kelvin building, which makes a course on data analysis perhaps also appropriate, because in the year 1900, Kelvin very famously and rather stupidly said that there was nothing more to be discovered in physics now. So he got that quite spectacularly wrong, but the second bit he said was, all that remains is more and more precise measurement. And it's fair to say that a lot of areas of physics and the physical sciences do indeed now involve very exacting high precision measurement. I work in cosmology. I'm going to try not to make too much of what I cover examples drawn from that field. I'll try and make the examples as broad based as possible. But certainly for about 10 years, there's been a phrase around which, you know, some of the people who are in the astronomy theme might have heard, where I think it was Malcolm Longyear from Cambridge that first coined it, but he talked about us living in the era of precision cosmology. Now, people can dispute that because there's still a lot of numbers that we don't really know to better than about 10 or 20%. But we're getting there. There's a lot of data there. There's a lot of models which are being tested. And that's really what this course is about, is to tell you how we go about doing all of that. How might we aspire to do what Kelvin was saying we ought to be doing, which was making more and more precise measurements. So here's the kind of rough breakup of the 2 days. I'm going to try and be quite flexible about this. You know, it's not like, you know, undergraduate lectures where we've got a very rigid timetable we have to stick to. But I've tried to break it up into chunks of just a bit over an hour, and I'll do my best to not make that, you know, a continuous war of attrition and each hour of me just talking all the time and you sitting and listening. We'll try and make it as interactive as possible. But basically day one is consolidating some introductory material, but approaching it in a different slant, trying to understand the kind of underlying philosophy of data analysis and in particular probability. So even though some of the techniques that you meet on day one you might be familiar with already, or at least you'll have heard about, things like least squares, for example. You know, everyone sort of met that in their first degree, I imagine. Can I just check whether that's the case? Has everyone heard of least squares before? Don't be too embarrassed if you haven't. Right, so basically what I'm looking for with least squares is to regard that as the kind of workhorse that people use in the physical sciences for testing theories, fitting parameters to models. But what I want you to get out of thinking is that least squares is just a kind of magic black box into which you put your data and some answers pop out. Because quite often in the physical sciences, standard methodology doesn't always work because of particular assumptions that don't hold for the problem that you happen to be working on. So perhaps a kind of key difference between doing this sort of thing as an undergraduate and doing this sort of thing as a postgraduate is that as a postgraduate, there sometimes isn't an answer at the back of the book for you to check. You might be doing something that no one's ever done before, and maybe nobody really knows what the answer ought to be. So you've constantly got to think about how you might have done your analysis wrongly or incompletely or inaccurately. So even the familiar techniques like least squares that everyone's either used or hopefully at least heard of before deserve to be thought about again in the light of a more rigorous, a more formal approach to how and why we do data analysis. So that'll take care of a good deal of today. In fact, really up until lunchtime, we'll be mainly just thinking about the theoretical foundations of methods like least squares and another one called maximum likelihood. Those methods we'll look at in specific detail in the second half of today. And I will make sure that as much as I can, that we put good emphasis on practical applications. I mean, it's important that I give you the sort of theoretical foundations, but also let you see how it might connect to real practical problems that you would work on. Okay? I think that should take us through pretty much till about 5 o'clock tonight, as we have scheduled time for some coffee breaks and for lunch. Then we've got a break for a couple of hours, and tradition has been that people usually go to the pub for a while. But at 7 o'clock for 7:30, our super students are going to be meeting at Mother India. So can I just check who here is not a super student? What I mean by that is a PhD student at one of the super institutions. It's a rather embarrassing question I have to ask, but you know, just, yeah, okay, so we have one. Well, basically what this means is that much as I would wish the dinner to be open to absolutely everyone taking the class, I'm afraid I really can't, because it's not within my control to make it such. But the dinner is for super students, and I see that's almost everyone. And indeed, the head of the super graduate school, Avril Manners, who I imagine most of you have met or at least heard from before, Avril will be coming along to the dinner, and she told me last week that super were not only picking up the tab for the food, but also for your first drink. So after that, you're on your own, I'm afraid. But that's what's going to happen for the dinner. So in the handout I've given round, I hope there was enough for everyone to get one. I've given you the timetable. And indeed, you can see there's more advanced, more specifically Bayesian material in day two. But I've also included some stuff about assessment. I'll come back to that in a minute. But just having mentioned the dinner, let me just say something about that, and then we'll skip back. So the locals will know where Mother India is, or most of them will, I imagine. It's fairly close to here, and it's marked on one of the two maps. Maybe it's not. Ah, it's marked in this map, which I think I included in the handout. So we are here in the Kelvin building on University Avenue, and basically the simplest way to get to Mother India is down Kelvin Way, heading towards the Art Gallery and Museum, which will be well known to anyone from the Glasgow area, I guess, and possibly those from further afield as well. So Mother India is just along Sucky Hall Street, and we've got a booking for 7:30. And one of the most important tasks I do this morning is to get from you a list of who's coming, because I've got to let the restaurant know by lunchtime. So if I could pass this round and get you to sign your name, if you're a super student and you're coming along to the curry tonight. There will be a range of menus available. So there'll be a good mixture of vegetarian and non-vegetarian food. They also have a bring your own bottle option. So, you know, we can order wine, we can order beer. I say super will cover some of your drink, but if people want to bring some more, then they have a corkage or sort of beer can opening charge. I forget what it is, but it's not very much. So in previous years, some people have gone about it that way. Needless to say, much as I want you to enjoy the curry, what we've got to do is get going fairly early tomorrow morning. So don't want you overdoing it too much. But the curry's been a big success over the years, and I very much look forward to it tonight. It's a chance for me to chat more informally to some of you as well. So what we've got coming up tomorrow is a further development of some of the ideas to do with parameter estimation and model fitting. And those will be mainly within the context of a Bayesian inference approach, which has speedily becoming the sort of state of the art in many areas of the physical sciences. And then what I'll also be looking at is some advanced numerical methods. So that will partly be covering some of the computational techniques that are being developed to apply these Bayesian methods, and then also related computational methodology to do with things like fast Fourier transforms and power spectrum estimation, which again is a topic that crosses a wide range of fields in the physical sciences. So the lecture notes are already on my Supa. I've got this other website which I maintain independently of the Supa web pages, where you can find some further resources as well. And that is basically our program. So let me say a little bit about assessment. This is a topic that's come in the last few years for the Supa grad school. And I'll be honest, I think some of my colleagues, and I have to maybe include myself in this as well, are slightly uncomfortable about the idea of assessing our graduate lecture courses. At least assessing them via exams. So rest assured, there's not going to be an exam for this course. And indeed, what I've done in the last 2 years, and I'm going to continue this year, is that I'm going to make the assessment for our Supa PhD students purely formative. That's the jargon that means that you've encouraged to do it in order to assess how you've got on with the course and what progress you've made, but you don't formally have to hand anything in. What Avril Manners is going to do is seek from me a list of people who have passed the course. So for our Supa PhD students, basically by turning up, you have passed the course. So that's my approach, because I do not want people to get bogged down and worried about doing problems and completing formal exercises. Instead, this is all about, over these 2 days, just opening your eyes to the possibilities. So there is assessment, but it's open-ended and it's designed to help you rather than to give you a big burden of work over this semester. So spread through the lectures, there's going to be 15 multi-choice questions. That's just to give you an idea of how you're doing. You know, basically it's going to be questions where I'll pause for a minute, let you think about it, and then we'll have a look at what the answer is, and you can judge for yourself whether that answer makes sense. I've posted on my Supa a series of 10 numerical problems. So those are, for Supa PhD students, optional. But I do encourage you to do them. All the more so if you're going to be doing data analysis as a fairly serious part of your own research. But if data analysis is something that you want to dabble in, but you don't want to have the responsibility of handing something in, then don't worry. If you're a Supa PhD student, you'll have passed the course just by coming along. Okay? Now the bad news is, for, let me see, two people in the room, that we've also got here two of our master's students. They're doing an MSc in astrophysics here at Glasgow Uni. And I'm afraid for Graham and for Stephen, you do have to hand this in, because, you know, you're getting a formal qualification out of this course. So for your 10 credits in advanced data analysis, I'm afraid you do need to do the 10 numerical problems. And you do also need to do the mock data challenge, but I'll talk to you guys about that separately, okay? For anyone else, the mock data challenge is optional, but nonetheless, you're strongly encouraged to have a go, okay? And I'll give you a bit more details about the mock data challenge at the end of tomorrow. A little bit more about practical matters. We've got coffee breaks and lunch. There's plenty of places round about. Just sort of follow the locals is the best advice I can give you. And as I say, I've given you a map as well for anyone not local to Glasgow. So I think that's enough of all the kind of boring introductory stuff. Just before we get going on the actual course material though, I think it's worth me just pausing for a moment. And I know there's a big group here, but if we could just kind of quickly go round the room, if you just say who you are, where you're from, and what you work on, just, you know, a sentence or two. And it would also be very helpful to know, maybe I can just do this by getting people to put their hand up first. How many people here did the SUPA introductory data analysis course in semester one? So again, a good fraction of you, but by no means all of you. So what I'm aiming to do is to recognise that if people haven't done that course, I shouldn't be assuming too much, but at the same time, I don't want to bore to death the people who did do the introductory data analysis. So again, you can tell me whether I've got that balance right, but hopefully I have. Okay, so let's just go around and see where everyone is from and what you're doing. So if we could maybe start at the front.
Yeah, I'm Christina from St Andrews. I'm doing astronomy, microlensing.
Okay, excellent. Right, now I'm certainly not going to be able to kind of pause and comment on everyone, you know, but that one I have to comment on, because one thing I forgot to say is a couple about course textbooks. There's a slide on this coming up in a minute. But this one was published in 2005, so when I first did the data analysis course, this was very, very current. It's by Phil Gregory, who's an astrophysicist from University of British Columbia in Vancouver. And he works on exoplanet searches, and he works on looking for extrasolar planets using Bayesian methods. And at like 2 o'clock this morning or something, I got an email from him where he's reanalyzed another system. It's one of these multiple planet systems. So this is, you know, pretty current stuff. And, you know, certainly if anybody wants, over the course of these 2 days, to come down and take a glance through a couple of the textbooks, then, you know, I've left them out down the front. Right, thanks, Christine. I'll get round everyone more quickly, but just by coincidence, since you were working in exoplanets, I wanted to mention the book. Graham? Okay, that's good. Thanks, Graham. Remember to shout loudly so that everybody can hear. The acoustics in here aren't brilliant, but just so everyone knows who you are. Yep. Why a course on data analysis? Many of you may know that famous quotation, which is attributed to Mark Twain, although according to Wikipedia, the source of all knowledge, it's apparently Benjamin Disraeli that really said it, which is, there are 3 types of lies: lies, damn lies, and statistics. It's a phrase, particularly last year, you know, with the general election and all that, that I heard quite often, because I suppose what people felt they were being was bombarded with statistical information, and often with very little interpretation, or at least very little correct interpretation of that information. So basically, data analysis and statistics has always had a bit of a bad reputation. And partly what I want to do in this course is to try and debunk some of those ideas which has led to that bad reputation. Now, in the physical sciences, a course on data analysis is especially important, I think, because the approaches that you might adopt to doing data analysis that maybe work perfectly well in some fields where you've got vast amounts of data and things are pretty well behaved, well, frankly, they don't always work in areas of physics because, well, there's a variety of reasons. It can be because the data we have are affected by problems which render the assumptions that underpin the statistical methods invalid. So there are many, many, many books around which can help you to navigate your way through these sorts of problems. Like, for example, ever since I was a graduate student, a book which many people have used as a source of knowledge on how to tackle data analysis problems is Numerical Recipes. Has anybody here used that book before or something like it? Now, you can see a sign of how long I've been doing this, that actually I kind of grew up using Numerical Recipes in Fortran. I've just about got myself using Numerical Recipes in C, and then I've been graduating slowly to MATLAB as the programming language I use. There's also a version of Numerical Recipes in C++. So basically, it's become a kind of standard textbook which many physicists use when they want to develop codes to carry out data analysis. A lot of the material is available online, so I thought it was worth giving you a web link to where you can download some Numerical Recipes codes. The need for Numerical Recipes is diminishing, I think, because there are so many good programming languages that have a lot of this stuff built in. I've already mentioned MATLAB. The one that this guy, Phil Gregory, whose book I flashed up before, the one that he really likes is called Mathematica. And a lot of the examples and methodology developed in his book are couched in the language of how you would do things in Mathematica. Now, I think that's really good that there are so many of these things already now existing in programming packages. And the collaborations that many of you work for, like, you know, Atlas and LHCb and so on, there's vast, you know, data analysis packages that have been put together by the people working in those communities. I work in cosmology and gravitational wave data analysis. Similarly, there's lots of existing packages there. The big drawback to using somebody else's package is that you often don't really know when it will work and when it won't work. So a big sort of central philosophy to what I'm trying to do in these 2 days is to get you thinking a wee bit more deeply about problems so that even if you are using somebody else's code, you understand how it works and, more importantly, when it won't work, when it will break, under what circumstances will it no longer be valid. Because it might be that the code doesn't crash, but it just gives you an answer that isn't really trustworthy anymore. And in some ways that's worse than your code just crashing and not working at all. So for those of you who are doing data analysis, rather than those of you who are mainly interpreting other people's data analysis, then it's very, very important that you equip yourselves over your PhD with the tools to kind of really understand in detail how data analysis methods work. Now, even if you're just interpreting other people's data analysis methods, that's still pretty important as well, because you've got to be able to make judgments as to whether you can believe the results that you read about in other people's papers. You know, did they really do what they said they did by carrying out a particular form of data analysis? So in essence, what I'm saying is that you shouldn't regard any data analysis methodology, whether it's stuff that you apply yourself or stuff that other people have applied, as a simple recipe that can just be followed willy-nilly without worrying about whether it's applicable. This is especially true in physics because there are many circumstances in which the simple recipes just don't work. The circumstances are usually to do with you having weak signals or what we call correlated residuals, a term which, you know, we'll explore what that means, but I imagine some of you will have heard of things like that already. And then basically what that boils down to is that the assumptions underpinning the data analysis methods aren't valid. Now, what that can lead to is systematic errors. It can lead to errors which, no matter how often you repeat the calculation or no matter how much more data you acquire, the error is still going to be the same. It's because the data analysis method is just fundamentally inapplicable to the data set you're considering. Now, fortunately, in many situations, it's not as bad as that. But it's absolutely crucial that you can tell the difference between situations where it is okay and situations where it isn't. And of course, you've got supervisors and so on to guide you as well. But really, the business of doing a PhD is that, you know, the kind of "I was just following orders" defence isn't really valid by the time it comes to your PhD viva. So getting used to the idea that a deep understanding of why data analysis methods work, I think it's good to do that even at this early stage of your studies. Okay, so I'm talking in generalities here. Here's another generality for you. Many of the Glasgow people will know very well that I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and I have a poster in my office containing the collective wisdom of Yoda, all his various phrases and words of advice. A good word of advice in this context from Yoda is you must unlearn what you have learned. Because my experience is that quite a lot of data analysis taught in undergraduate programs isn't really all that good. Now, I'm not going to cast aspersions about any institutions, least of all our own, because I'm not seeing ours as all that great either. But a lot of the time, the way we teach data analysis in, say, undergraduate labs is via recipes. And we don't always give people the chance to really stop and think about whether the methods are valid. Now, we've got someone here from the Physics Education Group in Edinburgh who's been working with Ross Galloway, former colleague and good friend of mine, who's been developing a diagnostic test to explore ideas about data analysis. In fact, some of the Edinburgh people might even have done that already. I would encourage anyone who's interested to have a go at that diagnostic test, and let me know later if you are interested and we can set that up for you, because it's just a good way to explore how some of our notions about data analysis involve really what Yoda is reeling against, is that you've got to unlearn what you've learned to make sense of them first. Now, does anybody sense that it's just suddenly got a lot colder in this room? Right, okay, we'll monitor the situation. As you can see, I've come reasonably prepared because we've got this heater blasting out hot air, or allegedly hot air. Let's just see whether it still is. When we did the course last year, it was absolutely Baltic in here because it was, you know, very cold at the beginning of January. I was hoping it wasn't going to be quite so bad this year, but we may have to do something about this. Interestingly, now there is hot air coming out of that one. It's just, I guess, going in the wrong direction. Crikey, there's very cold air coming out of that, so that's not good. Interestingly, what I did last year, because it was so cold, I went to get one of these heaters at the morning coffee break, and then I brought it into the room, and then by lunchtime everyone said, yeah, it's a lot warmer. Only then did I realise that I hadn't plugged the heater in. So it was a real sort of placebo effect. But I can assure you this is blasting out some hot air. It's just the case that there's an awful lot of cold air coming out as well. If you can suffer for a bit longer, we'll go to about 11 perhaps, and then I'll go and see if I can do something about the heating. We can take an early coffee break. Anyway, so see, the Yoda philosophy is one of the things I want to try and deal with here, is to recognise that even if you've done data analysis already in some shape or form, it might not have been all that good, or it might have been a bit misleading, or it might have been a bit oversimplified. So we're going to try and go back to basics. Now, following on from this idea that in the physical sciences, data analysis methods often have to be thought about very carefully, the area I work in cosmology and in gravitational wave astronomy, that's especially important because we're doing what you could term remote sensing. We're looking at very distant parts of the universe. You know, whatever you're trying to do, it doesn't matter if you're looking at stars, galaxies, planets, whatever it is. The point is, you can't say, what happens if we change this? You've just basically got the data that the universe has given you, and you've got to make the best of it. So advanced data analysis methodology is especially important in areas where you don't have the luxury of rerunning your experiment or reacquiring your data multiple times. So this is just summarising some of the ideas that I kicked off with. Even if you think that you're going to do very little data analysis yourself, you're still going to need to assess critically results in the literature of your own field. So some of the jargon that people might use, they might refer to the statistical significance of results or the significance of a particular theory or model. So I want you to take away from this course an understanding of what that means. And most analyses are traditionally carried out within a particular framework called the frequentist or classical approach to probability. In fact, maybe I should really be updating this slide. This was certainly true in 2006 when we first taught the course. But Bayesian methods have been slowly gaining ground on classical frequentist approaches. And in fact, more and more and more of the literature is now describing the results of experiments and observations in terms of Bayesian language. Now, you might shrug your shoulders and say, what's the big deal? Should it really matter? Well, in many circumstances, it doesn't. But when the data are poor, then it actually does make a difference. And that's one of the things we'll see this afternoon. If nothing else, to echo the words of Phil Gregory in the preface of his book, it's important that you understand the differences between Bayesian and frequentist methods. First of all, to understand what they both mean, and then to understand the subtle differences between them. So I'd say, here's what Phil says. He says, we're currently in the throes of a major paradigm shift in our understanding of statistical inference based on Bayesian probability theory. So that's what he said in 2005. If anything, that paradigm shift has just gathered pace since then. And the aim of the book, and to some extent the aim of my course as well, is to help new students to make that transition while at the same time exposing them to some of the essential ideas of the frequentist paradigm. Hopefully that will allow them to comprehend much of the current and earlier literature, and also to interface with his or her supervisor, if your supervisor is still a classical frequentist. They maybe don't even know they're a classical frequentist, but just their approach to data analysis might be rooted in those more traditional methods. So there's a whole host of books. The Phil Gregory one is a really good one. I can heartily recommend this. Maybe not to buy for yourself, but if it happens to be available in your local library, it's well worth a look. There's another one which is actually shorter and cheaper, which is by Davinder Sivia, from Oxford. It's called Data Analysis, a Bayesian Tutorial. That's very good as well. This one, Information Theory, Inference and Learning Algorithms, is by a guy called David Mackay, who's more recently been the author of an excellent book called Sustainable Energy Without the Hot Air. So he's got a very, very strong affinity to tackling physics problems using common sense. His more recent book, in fact, has been jumped upon by the government and other, you know, agencies as kind of clear thinking about the energy problem and the environment. But his background is in Bayesian inference. And as I'm going to show you in a few minutes, the origins of Bayesian inference was once said by Pierre Laplace as just common sense reduced to calculation. So in a sense, the work that David Mackay is now doing is consistent with his earlier body of work on Bayesian inference. So this is quite a technical book, but it is very, very good. And it's also actually available online for free, because this guy is not in the business of making himself a great fortune by selling his books. Sure, you can buy it, but if you want to just download the PDF and have a look through, then you can. So if you do a Google search for David Mackay, Information Theory, Inference and Learning Algorithms, then you would find it online. A slightly older book, but a very good one, is by Louis Lyons, who's a particle physicist from Oxford. Now, he's approaching things very much in the classical or frequentist approach, but he knows about Bayesian methods as well, and he's very comfortable with both approaches. And his is called A Practical Guide to Data Analysis for the Physical Sciences, so that one's very good as well, especially if you're working in the sort of particle physics side of things. Because although Phil Gregory's book's very good, it's written mainly from the point of view of an astrophysicist. Although the methods are very widely applicable, most of his examples are examples drawn from astrophysics. So to go back to Mark Twain, here's a Mark Twain quote that I don't want you to follow. He also famously said, it's better to keep your mouth closed and let people think you're a fool than open it and remove all doubt. Please don't do that. I know it's mainly just been me talking at you so far, but as I say, as the lectures wear on, we'll try and make it reasonably interactive. I'll certainly have some questions for you, and if you've got any questions for me at all, don't hesitate to ask.